Today, a lot of people don't have pensions. Finding creative ways to save, you know, in the most tax-efficient way as possible is something we should talk about. I think first and foremost is acknowledging that maybe sometimes you need help. They're so focused on doing their job well that maybe they don't take a look at their own personal finances. Everyone always says that they're in a bad spot, and when we run a plan, I'm like, maybe it's not as bad as you thought it was. Think of it like going to the doctor. You're going to get checkups in hopes to prevent something from going wrong. Is that more beneficial, or would you rather go to the doctor after something goes wrong? And I thought, if I could just take a piece of that off their plate and make their life a little bit less stressful, that was my ultimate goal.
Welcome to Responder Resilience, along with my wonderful co-host, Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMTB, David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with financial representative Adam Palamara of Northwestern Mutual about topics like how do we know if we have enough money to retire, and how soon in a responder's career should they be starting their financial and estate planning, and how can we maximize our pension. We'd like to invite you to like and subscribe our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and you can sign up for email notifications of all upcoming episodes at our website, ResponderTV.com. We'll be right back to speak with Adam after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMTB. And we'd like to welcome Adam Palamara, a brother of Jason, who's been on the show a couple of times. And Adam's a 20-year professional in the sales and financial industries. He's currently working with over 100 first responders and veterans across the country. Adam is a member and sponsor for many local police organizations, and his mission is to give some peace of mind to as many first responders and veterans as he can. Welcome to Responder Resilience, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Adam. It's nice to meet you.
You as well. Thank you. I've heard great things from Jason, so thank you for having me.
No, we appreciate your brotherhood in more ways than one.
Yes, thank you.
So I wanted to ask you, how did you get interested in working with first responders in this way? Because that's not typical.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, obviously, my brother. He got into the force, you know, during 9/11, recently retired a couple years ago as a cold case detective. And hearing and seeing, you know, the daily grind that he dealt with on a daily basis on the job and then obviously off the job. And it's hard to be able to turn that off when you're leaving the job to go home, dealing with, you know, your spouse or children or daily living. And I know finance is one of those things. And I thought if I could just take a piece of that off their plate and make their life a little bit less stressful, that was my ultimate goal. So he was first and foremost, and meeting friends along the way and different colleagues and being introduced to many people because of my brother. It just became a passion of mine to give back a little bit.
That's wonderful.
And in terms of first responders, how many do you work with? I know we had the number 100 in your intro. Can you talk a little bit about your responder clientele community?
Yeah, mostly made up of police officers. I do work with a few firemen, EMTs, mainly police officers, again, because of Jason. So just in two and a half years, I've been working with over 100 first responders already. So growing fast. I know it's definitely a need and something maybe they don't think about, but I'm happy to get in front of as many as possible.
So I'm curious, how do you explain the technical or really complicated financial aspects of insurance and investments to first responders? Because I know I certainly don't speak the financial language. So I'm wondering how you're able to do that.
Yeah, I think it's just to simplify things, right? So you mentioned insurance. Two main types of insurance that are out there regarding life insurance. So term insurance, which is what is offered through the job. Think of it like renting a home. Very, very cheap for a max amount of coverage. And that's what's offered as an incentive through, you know, through the employer. Then there's whole life insurance or permanent insurance. And that's like owning a home. You're gaining equity in that policy. That's something you could access while you're alive. And it's a great way to maximize pensions.
That besides insurance, I know, you know, insurance is definitely a key piece. And what are there other things that you would bring into the mix?
Yeah, I mean, every situation is different, right? So whether it's a single married couple, multiple children, if they're taking care of their parents, every situation is different. So it's hard to really say what I would recommend for each individual person as it varies per scenario. Mm-hmm. But that's the main difference is that they do have pensions, where a lot of employers do not offer pensions anymore. So it's just a strategic way to implement insurance, like I said, to maximize those pensions.
When you get into talking about retirement, how does one know when they have enough to retire, and how do you help them get to that decision?
I have that question all the time. So it's really, honestly, the first and foremost is building a relationship with that client. I want them to feel comfortable talking about these things, because let's be honest, if it's insurance, that's morbid, right? No one wants to talk about those things. Right. If it's retirement planning and finance, a lot of people think that's boring. So I think it's building that relationship and knowing how much is enough, really not just to get to retirement, but it's to get through retirement mm-hmm. and to live that lifestyle you want to have after those years. So really sitting down, having a financial analysis with me, putting together a plan, and we just make sure we check off all the boxes and really find out what's important, what's not, maybe what keeps them up at night, some of their goals in mind. The time horizon of when they want to, you know, reach those goals. A lot of factors come into play, but really putting together, you know, a free financial analysis and building that relationship with the client.
Adam, how do you meet with your clients? Is that done in person, virtual, combination?
Combination. So first and foremost, Jason had introduced me to many of his colleagues. In turn, invited me to speak at their roll call. So whether it's 7 a.m, 3 p.m, sometimes both, getting in front of as many first responders as possible. Also doing a lot of charity events like Jason and I are doing this weekend, where I could just get in front of and introduce myself to as many as possible. There's absolutely no obligation, whatsoever. Really just want to introduce myself. And if the fit's not there, that's perfectly fine too. So through introductions, through speaking at roll calls, a lot of it is around the country. So Zoom obviously is a major factor there. So any way possible, I'm open to meeting as many as I can.
Obviously, it runs the gamut with how long people's careers are. But at what point do you typically think that people should be starting to plan for retirement in their future?
Immediately. Immediately. So obviously, when it comes to any kind of investing, you want that long runway. You want that compounded growth to be there. You want that plan to be there. Insurance-wise, obviously it's age-based. So the younger you start those things, the cheaper it is for you in the long run. And I mentioned to David prior, think of it like going to the doctor. You're going to get checkups in hopes to prevent something from going wrong. Mm-hmm. Is that more beneficial, or would you rather go to the doctor after something goes wrong and then try to fix that problem? So implementing things earlier early stage in the game is much more beneficial than waiting until the last minute.
It's kind of like financial prevention, just like we're doing mental health prevention. We're trying to get them as soon as possible. If you look at it kind of the same way, it really makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Planning for the future rather than waiting till last minute, obviously, is a smarter choice.
Yeah. And I was saying to Adam earlier, before we started recording, that in doing a presentation to a fire department about retirement, I did a bunch of research, and I started discovering things I had never considered before I retired. There are so many elements that go into it besides the estate planning and the financial and insurance piece, and there's also implications with family, with health. There's so much to consider, and I can't emphasize enough that it's a great idea to start that concept early rather than wait till, 5 years out, 2 years out, 6 months out. Having said that, can we talk a little bit about how first responders' financial needs differ from the needs of the general public?
Absolutely. Two main factors I think really come into play there is they can retire earlier in life than most people, right? Like Jason, for example, got on his early 20s, mm-hmm. retired in his early 40s. He's got a long runway ahead of him, a long life to live. And they have pensions. Up until the 1980s, that was a prevalent thing to have in retirement, is having a pension. Now, I believe less than 15% of employers offer pensions. So I think there's strategic ways to plan for that, and like I said, to maximize those pensions. And I think that is the major factor, is being able to retire early in life and planning for a large number of years rather than someone maybe who retires 65, 70 years old, and it's a much different landscape.
I think also what you touched on is so critical, as we've seen in the fire service, that the number of departments offering pensions seems to be decreasing every week. Is there a piece to strategizing, if you got a 401k or 457, whatever, is there a different approach than someone who's got a pension?
Absolutely. And that's the major factor, as we spoke about, with insurance and maximizing that pension. For example, if you're having a $100,000 pension going forward and you're married and you decide to take a spousal option, you're forfeiting a percent of that pension every single year. Sometimes it could be 10% of that pension. That's a large sum of money compounded for another 30, 40, 50 years of your life that you're leaving on the table. So instead, you implement insurance as early as possible, name your beneficiary on that insurance policy, and you can still take that max pension. So it's a win-win there.
Right. Yeah. Important point, because I would say from personal experience and just seeing other people going through the same process, it really isn't until the end of someone's career and then they approach HR and get the packet and they have to make that decision about what spousal benefit they're going to choose. And I think you need to really go into that decision with a full, armed with information on what the best strategy is, how you're going to provide for your spouse if you have if you're not there for them. Such a huge piece. And I can't emphasize enough how important I think it is to consider that well in advance of retirement.
The other strategies that you can offer someone who's getting close to that point, and maybe it is someone who didn't plan their whole career, because we know that does happen too. When you're working 90 to 100 hours a week, it's hard to find time to do laundry, I think, let alone maybe look at some of these. So what do we do when someone's getting close to that point? What are the things that you're really going to look at?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is acknowledging that maybe sometimes you need help. They're so focused on doing their job well that maybe they don't take a look at their own personal finances. So again, sitting down, absolute free financial analysis. Just sit down with somebody. See where you're allocating that money. See what you have in your 457, in your pension. What insurances do you have in place? What benefits maybe you're going to lose upon retirement? Just get a good grasp and a great bird's eye view of where you are currently to make sure we can get you to retirement and through retirement.
Do you think that a responder who's married versus a single responder are going to have some different considerations? And would you then use a different approach with both of those clients?
Absolutely, different scenarios. Would I use the same approach? Yes. Maybe tweak it a little bit. As for a single person, not having to take care of children, maybe not having a working or non-working spouse, having to take care of family, you know, their parents, if they own property, things like that. Every scenario is different. But I think first and foremost is acknowledging it young and early and planning for those things because situations do change. So I think, again, just acknowledging where you are in your career. And maybe if you didn't start it early and you see this podcast, know that you should sit down with someone. Call your HR department. Call your benefits department. Find out, you know, more information about your own personal plan and just become, well versed in what you're doing.
I'm hoping that this becomes more widespread in all first responders, but I see a huge gap and lag, especially with the EMS population. There are much less pensions and options like that. So it's very common for people in EMS, if they don't climb the ladder or if they don't leave for another profession, they may be working up until the time where they get hurt and they physically can't work anymore. So I'm hoping that as time goes on, you know, we can bring EMS also up to speed with police and fire.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's getting in front of those people. And you brought up a great point of hopefully not working until you get injured. There's certain hybrid policies in insurance that add long-term care onto those things that maybe you could add, you could utilize while you're alive. You don't just have to pass away for someone to access money in a life insurance policy. You can incorporate long-term care so you could stay home, you know, in your elder years and not have to worry about going into an assisted living or anything like that. So, there's different ways, to incorporate those things.
And if I'm correct, long-term care insurance is also insurance that's generally less expensive if you get it when you're younger. Is that correct?
I believe that's probably all insurances, all age and health based. So obviously, the younger you are, the healthier you are, the cheaper it is for those things. Not also factoring in the danger factor of some of those professions. Hopefully, we don't ever have to cross those roads.
Sure. Let's say we have someone who's, you know, kind of waited until the very end and they're nearing retirement and now they need to put together a plan. So what strategies do you usually, you know, what are some of the things you would think of for that scenario of someone who's just, you know, procrastinated till the very end?
Sure. Well, we have, you know, great proprietary software here at Northwestern. So plugging in all your information will print out a complete plan for you. Show some gaps that are there. Some gaps that you already filled, and we just try to fill those gaps over time.
It's unfortunate because I think the reason why David and I both are looking at that is because we know that that's such the reality in some cases. But if people can start out with a mindset of I need to plan for the future, it would just make everyone's life easier, right? And maybe some people would be surprised to find that they don't have to work as long or that they do have enough. Do you ever see that with people?
Absolutely. Everyone always says that they're in a bad spot. And when we run a plan, I'm like, maybe it's not as bad as you thought it was. Sometimes it is the complete opposite. but we plan to, you know, correct those things. But I think it's the reassurance that to tell people that what you're doing is okay. Not putting them down on you didn't do this or you didn't do this is reassuring. Hey, you're going to work every day. You're putting money into your retirement plan. You're protecting your family. Let's just maybe tweak some things and, you know, cross some T's, dot some I's there, and just to make it a little bit better. But reassuring that what they're doing is okay, and waiting is okay. You know, not everyone starts it earlier in life. But the fact that if they're acknowledging it and reaching out to someone like me or another financial firm, I think is the first step.
You know, Adam, I'm sitting here thinking again about the parallel between mental health and really this financial health that we're looking at. And what I see in my office and even in the peer support groups that we run is there's so much anxiety and sleepless nights based on this financial piece. And a lot of people, it's a really just huge source of anxiety that we deal with actively in therapy all the time. So I'm thinking if people like me and Stacey, other therapists, to the extent that we're able to raise this issue in treatment with people and bring it up in our office, you know, maybe we can get them to be a little bit more preventative and look at it earlier or encourage them to quell some of that anxiety by reaching out for the kind of support that you could provide.
Absolutely, and I've had those conversations with Jason all the time, and I think it was a great parallel that, you know, he obviously helps on the mental health side, but a big burden is the financial side as well, causing stress and anxiety, whether it's your spouse or your own personal stress on, you know, daily life. So again, like I said, there's no obligation at all. I would just really love to introduce myself, have a conversation, give them some peace of mind that what they're doing is perfectly fine. Maybe we just have to tweak things along the way, but giving them some stress-free, you know, feeling and taking a piece off their plate.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. There's an unspoken piece in maybe in society or in the public's eye of the financial stressors of first responders and just how many jobs some of them work, how many hours they work. I mean, we know just from a sleep standpoint what that does to a person, but I don't think that the general population really thinks about how this impacts first responders and really adds to their stress and adds to all of the things that we help them with.
Yeah, I think what people don't realize is first responders are real people, and they have to go to work every day. They have to wake up early. They have to maybe travel, deal with the elements, still be on their toes every day, deal with the stress of maybe the public or whatever the case may be. But now they still have to go back home. And now they still have to be there for their family and be there for their kids. And I'm sure thinking about how do I pay my bills, or am I saving enough for my child's education, or am I putting enough into my retirement? I'm sure that's something they don't want to think about. So if I could help them streamline that and not have them think about that when they go home, That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, you may be saving some marriages just by doing that.
I'm sure.
Good point, David.
there's some value to what you do that I never appreciated before I got with a financial planner myself. One of them is that taking a macro view of all the different aspects of one's life financially and in terms of estate. Because if you focus on something like a pension as the only benefit that you're going to get in retirement, it's pretty limiting in a way. But if you start to widen out the view, and all of a sudden if you have something like whole life, and if you have the long-term care, and if you have other investments, then the pension is not, you're not depending on it so much. And I'm just talking from personal experience, but I really appreciated the financial planner looking at everything much more broad perspective, and all of a sudden that pension is not now the centerpiece of our financial plan. It's an important piece, but we're not totally dependent on it. It really helped us relax a lot with, you know, we're living our life. So just a plug for financial planners for what you guys do and how important it is.
Yeah, I think having as many streams of income going into retirement, the better off you're going to be. Don't rely on just one thing. And yes, it's a great thing to have. Like I said, a lot of employers don't offer it anymore. But if you could add bits and pieces along the way to complement what the pension does, even better.
Right.
Do you feel like first responders are tend to be more conservative with their decision making about this topic? Because they're very often, we see them like very calculated, and they want a plan and they want to follow that plan. I'm wondering that point of view from you.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I've got a sense of brotherhood among, not only obviously as, you know, the moral aspect and the camaraderie of what they do, but I think they go along as a team with what is shown to them. And I don't think they're educated enough in the early stages of what they do have. But I think they all go along with the same beat of the drum. And I think if you can get out there and maybe open their eyes to other options that are there, and they don't just have to stick with their pension or their 457. They could complement that, like I said, with other things. But I think it's a little difficult at times, and I think once you get through one of them or build a great relationship with one, obviously it's a trickle effect into others.
Sure. Yeah, you know, the department I worked at did away with pensions during my career. And then you had a bit of a split between the guys who were pension, you know, grandfathered in, and guys who were now on 401ks and had to kind of resort to other instruments, other investments for retirement. And I think that also points up how important it is to get some financial advice when it's not clear cut, when you have so many choices, or, you know, you need some direction with it. It was, you know, you got to notice, well, such and such from this company is coming in to talk to you guys in the kitchen about this investment. And I don't think, you know, most of us really knew which way to go with it. So, I just would say that having a financial planner would be very helpful in the situation where you have to navigate all these different options.
Yeah, and I think it goes along with the times. You know, if we look at our grandparents, they worked, they live off of Social Security. Parents had pensions and Social Security. Today, a lot of people don't have pensions. So I think finding creative ways to save, you know, in the most tax-efficient way as possible is something we should talk about.
And that's an area of your expertise as well, right? Being able to look at kind of the tax structure and how that would impact all of the decision-making someone makes as well.
Absolutely. That's a huge part of the plan.
That's great. That's great to know.
Adam, is there anything else we didn't cover that you wanted to speak about?
No, I mean, greatly appreciate everything you're doing and everything men and women do in uniform. I'll never experience what they do, what they go through on daily life. But like I said, if I could be a resource for anyone and make their life a little bit easier, that's my ultimate goal.
Beautiful.
That's great. Well, I learned a lot just by listening to you talk today. So I really appreciate everything you're doing, and we'll try to support and get the word out for people to really think about this.
Thank you. Greatly appreciate it.
Speaking of that, where can people find you out there on the internet or social media?
So my personal website is my first and last name, adampalamara.nm.com. You can also find me on Facebook and LinkedIn as well, just by typing in my name. Obviously, my direct contact phone number is there as well.
Great. So we'll put those on the screen. Adam, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for, you know, being there to support responders and what you do. Something that needs to be talked about more, and so we're glad to discuss it here on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate
it. Thanks so much.
So with that, we'd like to invite you to like and subscribe our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Go to our website to sign up for email notifications on upcoming episodes and to watch all of our past episodes, ResponderTV.com. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.